Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 1 for Autumn Semester 2016. Lecture 5, delivered on September 6, 2016. The title of this lecture is Financial Statement Analysis.
I cannot emphasize it enough that accounting information is highly structured and in most situations, it is showing what has already happened. And in our world, what has already happened is at best only an indicator of what is about to happen, or what is the current state of a business. Anyhow, without further ado, I'm going to show you the resource, and you probably have seen this before, although I'm not all that sure anymore how much emphasis was done in showing you this in Business 100, but it's a hugely important resource for a lot of classes that you'll be taking now in these last 2 years. Let's see, do I want to use a bad browser, private monopolies, global snooping, or the NSA's snooping browser? Let's go with government. They're so incompetent. Now, this is... I better do this. My mind is not clear right now, so let me do it this way. Now, this is the Edgar... Oh, I see. Okay, this is the Edgar's... Oh, this is interesting. Nasty little trick that was just played there. This is not Edgar. Edgar is the official site of the Securities and Exchange Commission where you can get the financial information and a lot of other information on any public corporation. But now someone has paid Google to mislead you into a private site. Bite me. Okay, here we go. Thank you. Now, what I want to do is look into the Edgar Company filings. Edgar is an electronic system. You were shown this in Business 100, is that correct? Okay, I want to emphasize that some of you really didn't see it. I want to emphasize how important this site is, and I'll give you quickly the background, the history of it. When I was in consulting, starting in the 1980s, almost all companies, public companies, had to do their filings, and they filed them in a paper form. And this was a big, thick paper, like these K's and Q's, as we call them. I'll bring that up in a minute here. But then the SEC was trying to get with the electronic age, and they had a new system that they were testing. It was called Edgar. And you didn't file paper, you filed in electronic form with these tags around it. They were like the HTML tags that would eventually become a part of web pages. I don't want to bore you too much with this, but I'll point out, like, for example, HTML tags are like bold, high, slash bold. That's what eventually became web pages. And now it's a lot subtler and all that kind of stuff with CSS. But before that, there was this larger language called SGML that had been around for a long time, back even into the 70s and 60s. And what the Edgar system did was, it would allow you to make a filing of a document electronically with these tags, like that one I show you, except they were more technical tags, telling you, all right, this is the title of the document, this is the address, this is the name of the company, this is the phone number of the company, all the way down through. And then if you built this up, you could send it to them electronically, and you didn't have to do paper filings. is a very complicated system. I was one of the original filing agents with Edgar, and I was able to start making some decent money as a consultant just doing electronic filings instead of paper filings. It's all gotten real complicated now. But anyway, now I don't think any company files paper. I don't think they're allowed to. It's all electronic, and every tag is something that goes in somewhere into these documents. Very quickly, a company can go public two different ways. One way would be by a classic filing of something like a public offering of common stock or something like that. And there are a number of different forms, but the classic, the 800-pound gorilla, is to file register securities on a Form S-1. It's a monster document. I did only one full-blown S-1 as a consultant. It was way too much like work. Now they have lawyers and all that kind of stuff, accountants, just like rows and rows of them do these. But one way or the other, that's one way you can go public. It's on something like a Form S-1. You register the securities that you're going to sell, Form S-1. Then there was a Form SB-1, SB-2. There were different ways for small businesses. You could do it a little bit. Any way you cut it, it was a monster document. There was this first part that was all these technical things you had to do for the SEC. Then the second part was the selling document that you were going to propose to use to sell your stock or whatever it was. And then there was a third part, which was the audited financial statements. Okay, the other way that a company can go public is if it has already issued stock, private placements. It's not registered. You can sell stock under certain circumstances without registering it, but you can't trade it. No one can trade that kind of stock. In order to make that public company public and make that stock registered and freely tradable, a company could file a Form 10. It's sort of like one of these. It registers already existing securities. One way or the other, once you've done one of these, once you are a public company, you are in the program forever. I mean, you don't miss a beat. Every year you file Form 10K. And every quarter you file Form 10Q. Now the 10K is the accumulation of the Qs. Think of these as almost like amendments to your original filing. Whenever you went public, forever after that, you have to update through your Qs and Ks. Now these have huge amounts of information, but they are gruelingly long. But if you know where to look in these documents, you can find a lot of information useful for financial analysis. You can also find a lot of information that's useful for papers that you're going to write in some of your classes here at the school. There are also some other things that are worthwhile. When you look at the list of documents that a company has filed, like for example, there's one called Form 8K. Now, Form 10K and Form 10Q, those are periodic recurring. An 8K, you have to file whenever something unusual happens in your business that's not in the ordinary course. It's non-recurring. Okay, so if you're the president of a public company, you got sucked up into a mothership by an alien, I'd have to file a Form K because that's kind of like important, especially if you don't come back. Well, even if you do come back, because you're going to be messed up. Okay? Relevant information. One of the ways I made a lot of money for a while, you had these little corporations that had gone public and they had something, but a lot of them, there was a scam part to it. And they tried to do these pump and dumps where the officers of the corporation would make some press release to try to get the stock to pop in price, and then they'd sell what they could during a window that they were allowed to, and then the stock price would fall back. Well, if you file a press release, you have to file an 8K. So you'd have these companies that were filing press releases every week or two trying to pump their stock up so they could dump some of it, And every time they did it, I'd file a Form 8K, and I'd charge them back in that time $25 to $50 every time. And eventually they got the message that they weren't allowed, and it was getting expensive for them to do this pump and dump because I was doing these 8Ks. And then a couple of them, they decided to stop telling me that they'd done the 8Ks. And then lo and behold, they found out that the SEC came down on them like a brick building, and they got fined terribly because they weren't filing the 8Ks. They said, well, we had our consultant doing those, and I just documented. You never showed me that you'd done a press release. You were trying to save money by not paying me for this. But anyway, let me pull up a financial statement. NFLX, for lack of any greater creativity right now, search. Okay, that sucked. Did. Okay, Netflix. There you go, look. Its latest quarterly is up there on the board. Let me turn off this light so you can see their latest quarterly is up on the board. Now remember, these go up. You have financial analysts just combing these within seconds. They're looking at what's going on in these. So this is old story in here by the time we are looking at here. See, a couple of 8Ks. Current report of something that's gone on. They've done a couple. Now these are insider notice of trades that were inside trades, some of this is, and a 144. Rule 144 stock is restricted stock. For some reason, this stock is not freely tradable. Oftentimes, it is issued to insiders or stock that was sold in private placements, and then it can be sold, but only on opinion of counsel and in small amounts at specific times. So that would be something like a 144. Good grief, all of this stuff. Can I find like a 10? Oh, there's a 10K. Okay, their last 10K is here. That's the annual financial information. And this thing has tons of stuff in it. Now, the first thing you might want to do, what you're interested in is the financial stuff. This is very new. Well, it's not very new. I shouldn't say that. I was just around before anything like this existed. You can even download the Excel sheet of all of their financial statements. And then you can just tear it apart, break it down, make charts out of it for presentations, for classes, or if you're out there in the real world, for meetings that you have. All kinds of stuff are available. Now, the financial statements themselves. And keep in mind that these financial statements can have slightly different names, and what's in those financial statements can definitely have different names. But consolidated statement of operations. Okay, that's a quick snapshot of the income statement. And you can get these from other places, like go to Yahoo Finance or some of these other sites. They're all getting their information from here. And sometimes they screw it up, they don't pull the information cleanly, so you might get a number that's missing. Here, it's all right. And you can see right now that this, you can see the trending, you can do trend analysis and all that kind of stuff. A few mentions right off the top. Something interesting in financial statements these days at the SEC, there's a line. There's a line that is missing right here. See revenue minus cost of revenue? Now you'll see it in the book, they talk about it. I talk about it a lot too. Apparently they don't show this breakdown. Revenue minus cost is actually revenue minus cost of goods sold is what we call gross income. Or gross profit. And that line isn't in there anymore. I always, as soon as I download the spreadsheet, I just insert a row and I get that in there. This is an important line to what is to a certain extent. On Thursday, I'm going to talk about analysis of ratios and all that. Here, it's just survey, know what you're seeing. But look, cost of goods sold, those are costs that can be physically associated with something you sold. You can do a one-for-one match on it. So for example, Madam, you purchase dried flowers and baskets to make dried flower arrangements and ribbons. Now you've got a basket and it's got all these nice things that went into it and you sell it for $20. Well, now you can directly associate with that a certain number of flowers, a ribbon, and one of those styrofoam things you put the stuff in and all that. Okay? Those are directly associated. However, what would not be directly associated would be things like your light bill for the shop where you do this. I mean, it'd be actually almost impossible if you use something like a fragrance in them to, well, I use 2.1 ounces. No, you can't do that. So that would be a general cost. You hire this fellow to pose for pictures with your flowers. No, you don't. You can't associate him with a sale of a flower. To give you a more realistic, just in my own world of what I do as a professional landscape photographer, I can associate a frame with a picture, a mat with a picture, the dry mount behind it and all of that. So I can say, all right, this thing, I sold it for $640. All the frame, the UV glass or the museum glass and the mats and the dry mounting can run about, let's say, $280. That would be a cost of goods sold. What I cannot associate, which would have to go below that line, would be things like the wear and tear on the camera, the use of inks that were used for printing. Because sometimes I'll have to print once, sometimes five times before I get it exactly right. So there are things that I can't associate. So the cost of goods sold is, think about that almost like your wholesale cost. Okay? So your gross margin shows you how much you have surviving after you've paid the direct cost of the things that you sold. So in this case, now, what is that gross margin? By the way, gross margin is the percentage of it. The gross profit is the number itself. But look at it for Netflix. I mean, I'm looking at that, I'm just giving a shot. It looks like about two-thirds, maybe about two-thirds, they have only about one-third of their revenue survives paying the direct cost of getting the stuff that they sell. You see that? It's, what is it? It's like about 6.8 million, 8 billion is how much they sold. Of that, 4.6 billion was what they paid for what they sold. So their margin, their gross margin, is actually not that robust. It can be all over the place. Some industries you have the gross margin, it's like 90%. Others, it's like 10%. In this case, it looks like what? About 6.8 minus 4.6, 2 of 6, 1 of 3, about a third of their revenue survives paying for the goods, at least in the last year. Now, what you can do is you can look at that. One of the things that I'll tell you about on Thursday, and I'm trying to get you to do this the way a real financial analyst does. We don't sit there immediately with a calculator and start. We're looking at it more for trends. We're looking at it more in a holistic kind of way. We can break down the numbers all we want. As a matter of fact, we're the programs that do it for us. But anyway, once you've gotten past that wholesale cost. Then you see things like marketing, technology and development, general and administrative expenses, and then you subtract all of those out and you get what is called your operating income or your operating profit. Interestingly, I see this in a lot of financial statements at Edgar now. You won't see the gross income, but they will report the operating income. Okay? Now, you got to watch it because the operating income, the other term for this, get this down, is EBIT, earnings before interest and taxes. EBIT. You'll hear me say EBIT. It is synonymous with, well, I shouldn't say that. It's usually synonymous with operating income. You will see some companies, their Edgar filings, they will say earnings before interest and taxes. Others will say operating income. It can drive you up a wall how much variation there can be in the same concept in financial statements. For example, revenue. Is there another word for revenue that you might see? What? Sales, yes. You'll see revenue. You'll see sales. Cost of revenue. You'll see cost of goods sold. Cost of revenue. Other, operating income. You'll see earnings before interest and taxes. Then you look at your interest expense. Well, ow. You see that interest expense there? 132.7 million. Okay. Now look at the line above it. That is how much is available to pay the interest. The line above it, operating income is 305, about 306 million. The interest is, that's how much they have available to pay that interest. Now, here's an important question. What would happen? You are a financial analyst. Okay. Nope. Okay. You're a financial analyst. What would you say if that number at operating income was smaller than the interest expense? Oh, yeah, that would not be good, as in there's an asteroid coming at us and it's going to split the planet. It won't be good. It's like being in a locked room and the guy who's in the room with you likes dubstep. It is, can't be good is a serious, serious matter here. Because if they cannot pay the interest, the business is over. It's done. That's it. Because interest is owed to the debt holders. And if you don't pay the debt holders, they will simply shut you down. If you don't have money for a dividend for the shareholders, all they can do is bitch at you. But if you don't pay the debt holders, they will just turn the engine off, take the keys, and go somewhere else with them. That's how serious it is. And that's why we are all kinds of excited about seeing that line operating income above the interest. But you gotta watch. What the hell is that? Oh, okay. Okay.
Good. Always worries me. We have some really old professors here, you know. I'll miss them, but, you know, we will have better parking once they die. But.
Look, the interesting thing about this, though, is that, well, the more that is, the bigger that is, the operating income is compared to the interest expense, the better. Actually, no. If it's too close, oh, yeah, that'll make my hind leg go up and down. That's scary. But if it's too far away, if that operating income is enormous compared to the interest expense, I ask myself, why are you being so stingy with bringing debt? Debt is cheaper than equity usually, and here you are, you're not taking on hardly any debt at all. Is it just something, a big thing with you? Because if you could take on more debt, you could make your shareholders have higher return on equity, and yet there you are with this little tiny interest expense. You'll see there are a couple of corporations that are very significant, large corporations that have hardly any interest expense whatsoever. Now in this case, oh well, I'm not going to criticize. Remember, this company just took on a huge amount of debt. So they are about a little more than a third, what, about 40% maybe of their income available to pay interest goes to interest expense. And then they have all this other stuff down here. And we get them down to their net income. That's their profit. And here's a good thing. If that's positive, that's better than if it's negative. Okay, you might want to write that down. That's important, okay? Lord knows I should learn that lesson one of these days myself. But it does not mean, just because it's positive, does not mean that the company is healthy. Because you've got things in there that aren't even actual expenses. You'll have depreciation in here. You will have costs that they haven't paid, but they still owe the, I shouldn't say that. You'll have things in here that are, I shouldn't go on too much about this. I'll have more time to do it tomorrow. Okay, now, earnings per share. In other words, you take the total amount of money available to the shareholders. See that? $122,641,000? That is shareholder money. That is the residual claim. This company, Netflix, after it is paid, its prior claimants, the debt holders, paid its bills in a timely manner, paid its payments on its loans and all that. This amount, $122.6 million, is for the shareholders. The company can do one of two things. They can do two things with it. One is they can pay dividends. Just give money back to the shareholders. The other thing they can do is plow that money back into the company to grow the company. Some companies choose a balance. They give a little bit to the shareholders, plow more in back into the company. Some companies don't give anything to the shareholders. They keep it all, plowing it back in to grow the company. Earnings per share. That's the total available to shareholders divided by the number of shareholders. So the earnings per share of this company right now are 29 cents. Each shareholder's share of the claim per share of the residual claim is 29 cents. Diluted. There is stock that could come into existence. It is in the form of options right now, usually given to executives and stuff like that. It hasn't become stock yet, but it could. So we do a calculation called fully diluted, saying, what would this number, earnings per share, be if all that stock that is hidden, that is not yet born, came out? Usually the numbers aren't too different, but you got to watch it. And then they tell you about how many shares there are. Balance sheet. Okay, that's the income statement, the profit and loss statement. It's just right there. And again, you can download all of these. Let me show you something real quick here. Okay. Real quick. Look at all these financial statements. They're yours. You can download them. This is a public company. It has to give this all of these different reports, breakdowns of the numbers. They're all right there. I mean, sometimes it gets to the point where, I mean, it's almost overwhelmed. It's ludicrous how much information you can get. But, I mean, that's there. You can download the Excel sheet for a company and then just do your own analysis anytime you want and make charts for your reports. Impress the heck out of your professors doing that kind of stuff with all this. Okay. Consolidated Statements of Comprehensive Income. This one, not a whole lot of places you were going to need this, unless you really want to get down into the things like the foreign currency aspects of the company, which in this case, it's worth you noticing this. Is that a big, looking at this, do you see the trend? Do you see the trend that's been happening with Netflix? What are the costs of becoming international? You see it? What's been going on with it? Little tiny positive number, especially compared to their this. And then it just gets negative. And then here, that son of a dog gets really seriously negative there. So you see that the internationalization of the company, it's worth just noticing. It's not something that we're going to attack and break down and think about it deeply, but it's just something worth noticing. And again, I'm trying to emphasize to you that our world of financial analysis, there's a lot of number crunching, fine, but there's also this aspect where we sit back and we look at the numbers and say, what is it telling me? Okay. Some of these are just not going to give you much, but this is, seriously? This is the statement of cash flows. This one is useful to us in financial analysis, because this gets us closer to something that we care about, cash. A wonderful story right from around here. It's been maybe about 5 years ago, we had a banquet luncheon where these executives or ISU grads, alums who are up in companies, you know, they've gotten themselves promotions to the point where they're executives or junior executives. We have them do this luncheon where a discussion panel of former of ISU alum talk to our current students, and they describe their experiences, and then they take questions from the students. One of the companies there that time, and I think this was like 5 years ago, was Caterpillar. Caterpillar, they had a junior executive. She was very bright, ISU grad, really proud of her. But she said for years, Caterpillar, she said, we had been focusing on profit. And we finally realized that that was one of the big problems that was causing us to have serious issues in the company's survival. She said, we have now finally turned it around and we are focusing on cash flow, but it's going to take us more than a few years to realign our business model to improve and support cash flow and not worry about profit. She was quite glib about it. It was paying attention to that profit. They were just spiraling in because there was not cash moving through the corporation. And this gets to the point where you think about this in a lot of businesses. An executive I know at a company here in town, relatively decent sized company. She said, the big issue that I have to get my people, her subordinates, to understand is that when we have money come in, you don't just pay your bills. You don't just get rid of it right away. She gave the example, we had $6 million come in. She said, before I could stop them from doing it, my subordinates had paid bills that were due for, in one case, for 2 months. And there we were, we had $6 million we could have had as positive cash flow and then pay those bills when they come due and not before. They didn't understand, you don't just pay your bills, you wait until you have to pay the bills. That's how you maintain your cash flow, okay? Nasty little trick that is done by still, to this day, some gas stations. Maybe you've seen this. You put in your debit card, and what it will do is it will take out a fairly substantial amount of money, lock it in, And then it'll lock in, for example, $75. You pull $35, $40 worth of gas, it's a couple of days before they release the other $40, $45 back to you. They play your cash flow. And they enhance, they make a ton of money that way. They always have this reservoir of money that is in transit. They've taken it and they haven't given it back to their customers yet. And they can make a fortune off that, just because that money can earn money in overnight markets, and it balloons their balance sheet so it looks like they are a bigger company than they are, and they have more cash flow than they really should. Did any of you ever notice that happen on them? Watch your car. Watch how much they take out, and watch how long it takes for it to come back in. Now they've gotten a new trick where you can't even see it. Some banks are supporting them by not even showing you that there's a lockdown on a little bit of your money for longer than you know. Anyway, enough of that. Yeah, go ahead. It was 5 years ago. Yeah, it's too late to do anything about it now. But the honest truth of this.
There's a problem with this microphone. I don't know. It's kind of silenced itself. I don't.
Okay. Caterpillar's having problems. Now, I'm not supposed to say that because this is the Caterpillar Auditorium, but they do have, they're not going to. Awkward! But the truth of the matter is, it's a survivor, but it's a survivor that has got to adapt to a new world. It was large, and it was sort of like a dominant figure for a long time, and this world is changing. And one of the problems with industrial companies is that they don't quite understand, hardly, no one really does, where we are going from here. For example, on the international stage, heavies are everywhere. Industrial manufacturers that provide heavy equipment for a world that is tearing down everything and building everything back up new again. And I mean, all of the companies are really kind of mystified. Where do we go from here? One of the big challenges will be in the next 10 years, how do we deal with all of these manufacturing jobs that are going to disappear in the world of 3D printers? They are going to wipe out millions and millions and millions of jobs. Companies are going to have to invest in these if they want to stay on point. It's going to be really complicated out there on a corporate level, investment in these new technologies, and on a social level, we get rid of those people from the workforce. How do we keep them from tearing down the entire planet because they have no stake in it anymore? So it gets a little bit complicated from here. Fortunately, it's your problem, not mine. Oh, I'm sorry. Anyway. Yeah, okay. Now, well, let me get over here to balance sheet. An interesting thing about financial statements. Honestly, I don't remember when. I don't know when it happened. We used to have to provide all of these back years of income statements, like 5 years. And balance sheets, you had as many balance sheets as you had income statements. Anymore, all you'll see are 2 years of balance sheets. You can dig around in these and find more years of balance sheets, but right up front. And that makes it kind of hard to do trend analysis, see how much year over year. Even three years is not all that great, but 2 years, I mean, all you can do is say, well, it looks like their short-term investments went up by what? About 20% and all that kind of stuff. Keep in mind, though, down here, total stockholder equity, it went from 1.85 up to 2.2 billion dollars, okay? That's what's called book value. Book, or sometimes you'll hear me use the word book, okay? You have something that is much more useful that I've already shown you. Market cap. Market cap is the market's assessment of the position, the value of the equity in the corporation. Book value is just an accounting identity. A famous thing that happened coming out of statement of stockholders' equity is looking at, they get complicated when you see something like that. Let me show you something real quick here. Okay, your retained earnings at the beginning. God, I almost feel some of you clutching when I start doing doing accounting here on the board. But okay, returned earnings at the beginning of the period. Let's say it's $1 million plus net income. Let's say that's $200,000 minus dividends. Let's say that was $20,000, and that would be your retained earnings at the end. And then, $1.2 million, $1,180,000. Okay. And then you got your stock that you sold. Say you had sold 1 million shares. Let's say at some time in the past you sold stock sales. You sold 500,000 shares at $4 per share. That would be 2 million more. You add that and that, and you get your total stockholders' equity. Look. It would be 2 and 1, 3 million, 180. Okay, the point that I want to make here. These numbers are accounting numbers. They are not really particularly well connected to the real world. I do not say that to trash accounting. Accounting has to follow generally accepted accounting principles. It has to do it in a structured way. However, that number down there, that $3,180,000, that has no tangible, no meaning in the real world whatsoever. It is disconnected. And a famous story, they were talking about how, in an executive meeting, they were talking about how they were going to finance a project. And this young man who had an accounting and a finance degree, he said, well, we'll finance it out of retained earnings. And one of the old executives said, I want you to leave the room. You find the checkbook that at the top says retained earnings. You bring it back to me and I'll sign the check for the project. But don't come back to a meeting until you found that checkbook that is retained earnings. Of course, you couldn't. There is no such thing. And that's what you have to appreciate. This is just an accounting number. It's required by the government, by about everyone else. But let's look at something real quick here. Finance. I'll go to Yahoo for this. .com. NFLX. NFLX. Market cap. $42.65 billion. Total stockholders' equity, 2.2 billion. Those numbers are quite a bit different. You see it? Look, this is the book value of the stock. This is the market value of the stock. The market value is the value that is important in finance. The book value, you see, there's not even a connection between the two. One thing that the book brings up, and I will mention this, is you can do a ratio that's called market to book. I mean, I don't know what it's worth. And I've seen these analysts who say, well, the stock price is too far above book value right now, so I think this is a sell. That's no signal at all. That's a meaningless thing. I mean, the book value is just a historical accounting of the ins and outs, the money that has been recorded coming in minus the money that's been recorded going out according to generally accepted accounting principles. But again, if your interest is in what's going on, hey, that's not bad. That stock is going up today. Anyway, this is the one that you want, not a market value. What the market cap is just $42.5 billion. The accounting here is $2.2 billion. Does that mean a lot that the market is way above the book? No. One thing, however, that I would point out is if I see the market below the book, that worries me a little bit. That's where that number might kind of be important to me, is if the market cap is below the book. In other words, if market to book is less than one, if market to book is less than one, that is a little bit of a concern to me. That gets me a little bit of interest in there. But other than that, last thing to show you here is back here. Where was Yahoo? Oh, okay. Yahoo Finance. If I can find it here, statistics profile financials. Here's what I was talking about. You can get a lot of this financial information right here on places like Yahoo. The danger of this is that, and I've seen this over and over again, they have these algorithms or these programs that go to the SEC and pick the numbers out and then bring them back to their reporting site like Yahoo. Sometimes they don't pull the number correctly. And you can have quite a period when people are using a number that's not the right number for financial analysis. So always go to the original numbers. It doesn't hurt to check these numbers. They're usually pretty reliable. But if you're going to do serious financial analysis, go back to the original site. But if you want to just look, this is obviously income statement. And you can see some interesting stuff that's been going on. Net income, the heck? Am I seeing that right? Didn't even notice that. But anyway, just be a little cautious when you're doing this kind of stuff, because one thing that you will see, the one that is constantly getting flawed, is the interest expense number. By the way, just real quick, notice Netflix. Do you see that they more than almost tripled their debt, their interest expense, from 2014 to 2015? That is the consequence of that giant issue of debt that they made. But still, the question is, what are they going to do with that debt? Because it's not clear that they have done anything really meaningful with it yet. But they are paying out the butt for the interest on it. So you might want to think about this as a watch them kind of thing for Netflix. When are you going to start using that money to generate lots and lots of revenue for the shareholders instead of lots and lots of extra interest expense that takes away from the shareholders? That's a little bit of a dark cloud, a challenge for any kind of analysis of Netflix. Think about that when you're looking at all any company. They take on debt. Show me where this debt has turned into lots of money for the shareholders. Otherwise, all you're doing is making the shareholders pay for a lot of interest expense for no gain at all. Okay, I'm going to give you a quiz now. You have until the end.